3, 2, 1.
Welcome to It's Fabulous!
True personal stories.
Exfabula is a Milwaukee nonprofit committed to strengthening community bonds through the art of storytelling.
And it's time for Exfabula Radio on Milwaukee's NPR. Good afternoon. Glad you could join us. And joining me in the studio is Exfabula co-founder Leah Delaney.
Hello, Rachel. We are rolling right into April. And Exfabula is nonstop with a whole bunch of different events happening. But our theme today for our Exfabula Radio is money, because in light of our upcoming election on April 3rd, we are recognizing that the legislature placed a constitutional amendment on the ballot to eliminate the office of the state treasurer. So I don't need to tell anyone the importance of voting, but we will again, because as Michelle Obama is quoted to say, elections aren't just about who vote, but who doesn't vote. So we want everybody to get out there. So let's head off with our first story today about money. Angela McManaman told this story at our Forgotten Slam. So let's listen to Angela's money story.
I'll tell you about the time I moved into my very first house in 2004. I had a 3-year-old son at my side and a 10-day-old baby. He weighed about as much as a bundle of papers in my arms. And when we walked up the front porch and we opened the door, I was excited until I looked around and I saw a 65-year-old man's entire life spread out before us in the living room. I cried because his faded cowboy prints were still on the wall. I cried because the area rugs he promised me he'd remove before we moved in were still on the floor. And I cried every time I opened a drawer in a kitchen or a bathroom and I found a collection of stubby yellow pencils or a rubber band ball or the White House Wives cookbook circa 1920. Turns out they cooked with a lot of lard in the White House back in the day. And I cried until my new baby started crying, and then I fed him, and I walked up the gleaming wooden stairs of our new home. And the second floor looked kind of like a dormitory, one long hallway with 3 large bedrooms opening up off the main hallway and a tiny bathroom. I opened the closets, and I cried again when I saw more of the previous owner's entire life in those closets than I ever expected to see, and things that I never expected to own. Old geometry notebooks from Marquette High School, wig stands, metal cots. And so I realized my first night in that new house would not be about moving me in. It would be about moving him out. When the rest of the family slept, even the newborn baby, I scrubbed the bathroom that he was sick in with cancer for years clean. And I don't know why I didn't see the dirt during the open house, but I didn't. But it took me 2 hours that night. And I got through the clearing of that house with the kindness of strangers. The sanitation department came twice for a special collections. And I cried when the woman backed up the truck and I brought her brownies. And she cleared the entire concrete slab in our backyard of all of his possessions. They were mounted high. And she said, honey, that's our job. You don't have to cry. And when 2 pickup trucks full of Hmong gentlemen came to my house, I cried because they went to the basement and lifted up heavy old pieces of German furniture and they carried it out the door. And I think the final straw was when I tried to give them a tiny little Christmas tree decorated with tinsel, not my most culturally sensitive moment. So 8 years passed, and for all those 8 years, I carried the weight of that man's possessions with me. I don't quite know why. Was it postpartum? Was it the work? Was it how damn rude it was just to leave, you know, most of your stuff in that house that he'd grown up in his entire life? So I started in places in the house that I'd never really been before as I began to clear it and prepare it for the next owners. I was in the basement with my mother one Sunday afternoon, clearing old, misshapen coat hangers that he had used for fishing. And I cleared them from nail hooks that were embedded in the rafters. And I put them in a big plastic bag. And we probably spent an hour in that basement. I found old shoemaking equipment, among other things. And then, as I cleared what I thought were the last of the hangers, I heard a little tiny thud. And I was about 8 months pregnant at the time, but I was able to kind of awkwardly get down, and I picked it up. And it was a steel Band-Aid box, retailed at the Pill and Puff at some point in the last 40 years for about 83 cents. So I opened it up, and I saw a series of $50 bills neatly rolled inside. And before I could even count the $50 bills, I opened them up to see that there were $20 bills rolled inside of those. And if you've never been in an episode of The Sopranos, I can promise you, it kind of feels like that. I opened the box, I looked at the bills, I gave it to my mother. She said a few swear words, and then we gave it to my husband. This house was a burden for me in some ways, as well as a joy. $3,000 later, we decided to keep the money. The previous owner had died. He was the last of the family. We'd learned many of their secrets over the course of the years, and I understood why. We still have most of those $3,000. The steel Band-Aid box is about 10 rows back from here, but it turns out everybody's forgotten what a vintage 1960s era $20 bill looks like, because when my 14-year-old son tries to spend it at Jimmy John's, they won't take it unless he brings an adult in the room. Thank you.
And that was Angela McMenamin telling us her I Found Some Treasure story.
And I never would have thought that bills from, I think she said the 60s, that those would have looked so different. But Who knew, huh?
Yeah, exactly. So we're going to go right into our next story because we're doing a threefer today. A couple of different little short stories. Our next storyteller is Jane Bartosi, who told a story at our Havenswood community event. Let's listen to James.
My story is an illustration of the African proverb, if you want to go quickly, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. I'll say it one more time. If you want to go quickly, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. So about 8 years ago, the round table of human resource directors here in the Havenwoods Economic Development Corporation were all concerned about finding and keeping good employees. They also wanted to, if possible, employ people from the neighborhood. And I was the director at Silver Spring, and I was trying to find good jobs for residents from West Lawn and the surrounding neighborhood that came to our neighborhood center. So Stephanie and the HEDC were the bridge to bring us together. And this little partnership formed of HR directors and actually co-owner of one of the businesses here, along with some people from Silver Spring and some others. And we started meeting three Fridays a month, I think, for the better part of a year. So there was Linda Ruth from Genco, Joanne Coleman from Henson Coatings, Les Wilson from Perlis Brothers, Stephanie and Liz from Havenwoods Economic Development Corporation, Phil Knable and some folks from Knable and Associates, myself and Anthony McHenry from Silver Spring Neighbor Center, and then we had some folks from the UWM School of Continuing Education who were helping us. And we put together an employment readiness program, and Stephanie was the keeper of the PowerPoint slides, and I think by the time we were done, we had over 350 PowerPoint slides that we were going to use in this employment readiness program for residents of the neighborhood to get jobs with these businesses. It was about that time, just as we were finishing, that the state of Wisconsin came out with a call for proposals for the new transitional jobs program. And it was like, it was so serendipitous, and the synchronicity was just too much to believe, because we had worked so hard and we were ready to apply for this funding. So we put in an application, but we were up against people like Goodwill, UMOS, and then whole entire counties from around the state. But we wound up getting a grant. There were 17 given from around the state. Ours was the smallest. We were serving just this neighborhood. But we actually wound up having the highest rate of success of any of the 17 grantees. We had the highest percentage of people who wound up getting jobs, and then we had the highest retention rate of people that did get the jobs. That retention rate was over 75%, which I don't know if you realize, but that's a, you know, it's a tremendous outcome. And it was because of this partnership that formed, and because we didn't go quickly and we didn't go alone, we went far and we went together. Thank you.
And that was James Bartosi, who told a story at our Havenswood community event.
I'd never heard that African saying before, but I really like the idea that it may take a little longer, but we'll all get there together if we stick together. And that's maybe the better way to go about things.
Most definitely. And I think Exfabula can fall right in line with that as well. Speaking of Exfabula, here's my little segue. We do have our first April event coming up, and it's a fellows event. The event is Talking to Children About Race. We did this last year, and it was so popular. We're doing it again, and it's going to be on Tuesday, April 3rd at Christ Church in Whitefish Bay. There will be dinner, and I really want to note that we're going to also have childcare there, too. So this is oriented towards parents, but if teenagers want to get into the conversation, we're welcome to that as well. But please note that you don't have to drop everything. We're there to help you come to that event because it's an important, difficult discussion. We're going to roll right into our last story here. John Bedelov told this little caffeine-infused story at our Stone Creek Coffee Secret Fabula event in March of 2016. Here's John Bedelov.
In 2004, I was living in New York City. I had sold everything I owned and moved there, and I had a few thousand dollars in the bank, not a lot. I didn't have a job or anything like that, so basically every day I would bike around the city. I lived in Brooklyn, and I'd go to Manhattan and just kind of around, try to get acquainted, try to find jobs, interview for stuff. So I was biking about 30 miles a day, and it was pretty exhausting. I wasn't really a coffee drinker at that point. I had experimented with it a little bit. I was a fan of Twin Peaks, so Dale Cooper liked to talk about his black coffee, and I wanted to emulate him. So when I was younger, I tried coffee, but it was just too bitter, and I couldn't really drink it. So I saw a lot of people kind of having to resort to Starbucks to get by in New York City. They would, you know, that was like the energy that fueled the city, it felt like. So I tried a mocha, and I'm like, oh, well, this triple mocha, this seems to be pretty palatable, and I can drink it. So I started to get powered by the Starbucks triple mochas. And I, since it was New York City was very exhausting, I was having two or three of these a day. And, you know, when you don't have a job and you're living off savings, a $15 a day coffee habit is going to start to add up. And you know, I didn't know what to do. So, you know, one day I said, I got to stop this. I got to find something, some other alternative or whatever. And I don't know. I in my mind, this place was Greek, but they had shawarmas. So it doesn't really, I don't think shawarmas are really Greek, but maybe it was, you know, some Middle Eastern place that had Greek food or whatever. But there was this, we lived in Brooklyn, and there was this nice, very busy stop in a street called Flatbush. Flatbush turns into Manhattan Bridge, which turns into Canal Street, which is the, you know, these are major streets in New York City, if you've ever been there. And there's a Q station, which is my favorite subway. And this place, the I'm going to call it the Greek place, even though I don't think it is. I'd see people coming out of there with coffee, and they'd have just these very small cups of coffee with blue Greek-looking cup. And I'm like, well, I go back there, and how much is coffee? They're like, oh, it's 50 cents a cup. I'm like, oh, okay, well, why don't I try this? And, you know, I'm like, oh, this is really bitter, but I am saving a lot of money. Like, I'm saving $4.50 on each of these by just drinking the black coffee. So, you know, after a couple of days, actually, I started to get used to it. And, you know, my $15 a day coffee habit went down to a dollar or two, which was much more sustainable when you're living off savings. And I started to really appreciate black coffee. I could finally drink it. You know, it's actually like a good, I always think of it as a little bit of a life lesson, which is really odd, but you know, you can kind of dress up a lot of things, you can make them fancy or whatever, but you know, at the core, the triple mocha is still coffee, and you can feel the core of it, the essence of it there. Just like a nice, good 50-cent cup of coffee from a Greek restaurant.
And that was John Bedelov. I can definitely relate to that whole New York dollar compared to Midwest dollar and coffee.
Well, even just Midwest dollars and coffee, there's so many great cafes like Stone Creek in town.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that was such a great event. And, you know, thank you, Stone Creek Coffee. We're going to be doing more Exfabulous next season for sure. So, you know, hopefully those doors will open to us so we can procure more stories. But other than that, our final story slam of the season is going to be themed Last Straw. So we'll keep you informed of that. And if you're interested in hearing anything else that Exfabula has to offer, story-related, community-related, head over to exfabula.org.
Thanks again, Leah. So great having you here. And we'll talk next week.
Okay.